Shalom. Thank you for joining me this week. And so this week we're going to take a look back into my archives of 5766, which would have been, about the fall of 2005. Again, thank you for joining me, and shalom. Shavua Tov. There are only a few times when, going from one Torah portion to the next, that we get what I would call an episode. Last week, Joseph's plan was hatched. He recognized his brothers as they came to Egypt in search of food. As they pay for the grain, it is hard to imagine that they did not realize that something was amiss when all of the payment for the grain mysteriously made its way back into the sacks with the grain. Joseph's charge to the brothers is not to appear in Egypt again without Joseph's younger brother, Benjamin. Knowing the brothers' reliability with any of Rachel's children, Jacob is loath to allow Benjamin to go with the brothers. Only when Judah guarantees the safety of Benjamin with his own family does Jacob relent and allow Benjamin to go. Back in the court of the vizier of Egypt, the brothers appear and receive their grain as they are leaving the cup, or more likely a goblet, of Joseph is placed in Benjamin's bags of grain. The evidence is conveniently found, and Benjamin's existence, as well as the pledge of Judah, seem to be in jeopardy. It is at this moment when Judah, Vayigash, draws near to Joseph. Now, this act of drawing close to Joseph is not always fully understood. In fact, it seems to be one of those actions that screams of ambiguity. To understand this action, just consider this. Try to, Vayigash, draw close to Dick Cheney. If you can ever find him in one of the secure, undisclosed areas where he loves to work from, try to draw close and have a conversation with him that cannot be heard. It seems to work if you were formerly employed by Enron, but to be a stranger in a strange land who is being tolerated at best and has been accused of spying, gosh, you know, things don't really change. And now you're acting with the chutzpah to draw close to the second most powerful man in the most powerful country in the world, something else must be going on. The rabbis of antiquity had various interpretations. Some interpreted this in the sense that Vayigash meant that Judah came close to do battle, since the same verb is used in the second book of Samuel, chapter 10, verse 13, came close to battle against the Arameans. Rabbi Joshua said that it means to come close to seek conciliation with another, as in Joshua chapter 14, verse 6. Others suggest that Judah came close to pray, for when Elijah came close to God to pray, the same verse was used in 1 Kings 18, verse 36. Just to wrap everything up, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Judah came close to fight for the life of Benjamin, whether it meant by seeking the ear of Joseph or, if necessary, fighting Joseph. Another interpretation suggests that Vayigash also implies judgment and that Judah sought to argue with Joseph for that which is right. And when the cup was found, all the other brothers turned away from facing Joseph, all except for Judah, who looked up and approached to demand justice and the ability to argue his case. This is a far cry from the Judah who suggested Joseph be flung into the well, and this action leads Joseph to lose it and break into weeping. As we remember the beginning of this journey, it began at the bottom of that dry cistern back in the land of Canaan. That image was with us this week as we watched with hope, listened fearfully, and felt as hopeless as Joseph did at the bottom of that well. The 13 miners who found themselves trapped at the bottom of that mine in Tolmansville, West Virginia, captured the attention of the country as we sat and waited for the news out of West Virginia. We shared the same sense of powerlessness that Joseph felt on that day as events and matters of life and death were out of the hands of everyone involved. We could only be assured that the rescuers were doing their best to bring these men out alive. We could only be assured, as Joseph was, that the person in charge there, namely Judah, was doing his best in a situation where he had gone from having all the power to being at the total mercy of another. We felt, as the miners' families felt, that same sense of inability to do anything except hope. In the parasha, it was not as if Judah was the one being accused, but he was the one being responsible. He was the one who took ownership of the situation, even though he probably could only have believed in a bad outcome at best. His actions proved to Joseph that he was not the cruel brother who had sold Joseph into slavery. Judah was now someone who led the brothers, even when there was trouble ahead. As we watched the leaders, and that was the word for these executives this week, the leaders of this company stood with the families in their own hopes and fears. We were reminded that while leadership may be difficult and the task great, it is the responsibility found in leadership that inspires other people. Those who run away from responsibility do not create motivation. To quote the late Peter Drucker, leadership is a foul weather job. When we are in the midst of it, we don't inspire people by complaining about the rain. We inspire by showing what can be done if those involved truly come together and work together. Still, it occurs when we are willing to risk and take a chance, when we can, like Judah, Vayigash. Thus, this word is the name of the parsha, and it's more than just a verb. It is an action, an attitude, and a willingness to risk. It is placing oneself in the breach and accepting that there will be no good fortune, no hopeful future, if there are not responsible people today. Speaking of responsible people, we have received grief for being the responsible people of the day. Our thoughts turn to another who has found himself at the bottom of a dark hole. Ariel Sharon, the more than controversial leader of Israel, finds himself, Israel, and the rest of the country and the Jewish world with him as he struggles for life after a massive stroke. A piece of honesty: if someone had told me 10 years ago that I would be hoping for Mr. Sharon's recovery, I would have questioned their sanity. Mr. Sharon has taught Israelis and the world that people can change and do change over the course of time. His apology to the Rabin family for the times when he and the late Yitzhak Rabin fought politically, and the ability to become more than his negative reputation, led him to take Israelis out of Gaza. He became someone who was more than just a war hero or a dubious and questionable defense minister. He became a very rare beacon of hope for the peace process in Israel. Not since Rabin was there a possibility to move forward and to have Sharon be the one who moved the peace process can only remind us that people do change. Now he lays, and we sit with him at the bottom of that dark place. The stroke and the bleeding in his brain has robbed him and those who care for Israel of his leadership and some of the hope we had. At this point, we still know that his pupils were responding to light, a good sign, but that people who suffer this type of stroke are lucky if they live. The gift he gives to Israel is the Kadima party, and in Hebrew, Kadima is what the officer at the head of the charge says to his troops as he leads them into a dangerous situation. Not to be left out of the conversation, though, Pat Robertson blasted into the scene to suggest that Sharon had suffered a stroke due to the pullout from Gaza. Robertson, who has a tendency to have an identity crisis with God, though usually we place such people in mental institutions for delusions or megalomania, just 3 years ago received an award from the Zionist Organization of America. Virginia Beach, July 10th, 2002. Pat Robertson will be honored by the Chicago chapter of the ZOA for his consistent support of Israel and the State of Israel Friendship Award with the State of Israel Friendship Award on Sunday, July 14th. Robertson has been an enthusiastic and vigorous supporter of Jewish causes throughout all of his years of service. He frequently voices his support for Israel's war against terrorism and her inalienable right to exist as a free democratic society on his national TV broadcast, The 700 Club. As a result of his unyielding support, Robertson has also been recognized with the Millennium Jerusalem 2000 Council Award by the State of Israel Jerusalem Heritage Study Program's Defender of Israel Award in 1994 by the Christian Israel Public Action Campaign, and the Distinguished Merit of Citation Award in 1979 by the National Conference of Christians and Jews. Now, as his friend lies fighting for his life, Robertson has decided that he needs to strike a different tone regarding Sharon. It is reported on MSNBC, in Washington, the White House sharply criticized Christian broadcaster and former Republican presidential candidate Pat Robertson on Friday for suggesting that the Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's stroke was divine punishment for dividing God's land. Those comments are wholly inappropriate and offensive and really don't have a place in this or any other debate, presidential spokesman Trent Duffy said as President Bush traveled to Chicago for a speech. Robertson, who has a history of controversial statements, made his comment about Israel and Sharon on his TV program, The 700 Club. He said, quote, "God considers this land to be his. You read the Bible and he says, this is my land. And for any prime minister of Israel who decides he's going to carve it up and give it away, God says, no, this is mine." Close quote. Needless to say, with friends like Pat Robertson, who needs Arafat? Robertson's words are a reminder of who will turn away and blame Joseph or Sharon or the miners for being in the dark pit? People who will use the reality and turn it into the actions of a cruel God who hates and blasts others for their actions. I wonder what God thinks of a ranting lunatic who continually gives God a bad name and what his end might be. It is a reminder that people who claim to be friends of the Jews or of Israel are sometimes little more than fair-weather friends whose interests happen to coincide with our interests. When they don't, you get a Mr. Robertson. As we prayed for the miners to come forth from the mine, as we know that God can and will deliver both Judah and Joseph from the abyss, we need to remember how we get there, how we get to that sense of deliverance. We need the Judahs of the world, those people who take the responsibility and will bring others out of the dark into the light. We need those who stand with us, not just when things are good, but when the world is against us. On this Shabbat, we pray for the healing and health of the Prime Minister, and we hope against hope that the darkness will pass, the darkness of his illness, the dark confusion in the peace process, the dark remarks of hateful people, and that a new light will shine upon us all. This is our hope. This is our prayer. Shavuot Tov. Music you hear on this podcast is from magnatunes.com and the groups Yaleh,